Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific. Coming up on today's program, Chinese hackers access plans to Australia's new national security building. United Nations adopt a plan to combat human trafficking. And as China grows, is this posing a threat to Russia's national security? We have this and much more on PCJ Radio International's Focus Asia Pacific, putting the focus on the Asia Pacific. Chinese hackers are being blamed for a major breach of Australian security. The Australian Broadcasting Corporation has been told that plans for the new Canberra headquarters of the domestic spy agency have been stolen. Experts say the theft exposes Australian security may be the reason why construction costs have been blown out of proportion. The ABC's Four Corners program also revealed there have been other damaging cyber attacks on Australian companies manufacturing sensitive defence equipment. ABC Radio's Simon Santo has more.
ASIO's expensive new headquarters in Canberra is running over budget and well past the date it was due for completion.
Someone has stolen the blueprints, not just of the overall building, but also of the communications cabling and server locations, of the floor plans and the security systems.
The ABC's Four Corners program says it was much more than simple theft. Someone using a computer server in China, it alleges, had launched a cyber espionage attack on a contractor involved in the site. Professor Des Ball from the Strategic and Defence Studies Centre at the Australian National University says it's a significant attack.
Once you get those building plans, you can start constructing your own wiring diagrams, where the linkages are through telephone connections, through Wi-Fi connections, which rooms are likely to be the ones that are used for sensitive conversations, how to surreptitiously put devices into the walls of those rooms or into the roofings above those rooms.
The revelation may explain the delays in finishing construction of the building.
At this stage, with construction nearly completed, you have two options. One is to accept it and practice utmost sensitivity even within your own headquarters. The other, which the Americans had to do with their new embassy in Moscow back in the late 70s and early 80s, was to rip the whole insides out and to start again. The British had to do that with several buildings in London.
When Four Corners put the embarrassing allegation to the Attorney General, the program received the usual response.
What can you tell me about that?
Nothing. I'm not going to comment on operational or intelligence matters.
But Mark Dreyfus was a little more forthcoming a bit later in the interview.
The more that is disclosed about what's known about espionage activity in Australia or operational aspects in counterintelligence, the more that our opponents, people who are engaging in espionage, will know about our capability and know about the methods that we have for detecting espionage, or that's at the general level, or detecting cyber threats.
Experts lined up to tell the ABC that the threat of cyber attack from largely Chinese hackers is growing dramatically. National security consultant John Blackburn.
You can protect the crown jewels, but if the case that's surrounding the crown jewels is made of glass, it's a little bit fragile, then you've got a bit of a problem here.
Former Australian Federal Police Officer Alistair McGibbon, now the Director of the Centre for Internet Safety.
It would be churlish to deny that there have been probably many other breaches of government agencies, but we don't have a culture in this country of talking about it.
One company that did speak on the record was the Adelaide-based electronics manufacturer Codan, CEO Don McGurk.
It's fair to say that in recent times we've taken steps to secure our computer systems by putting in multiple firewalls, and you can draw whatever conclusion you would like from that, but we've certainly had to take a much more serious approach.
The company makes sensitive radios used by intelligence agencies and by the Australian, British and US militaries. Four Corners alleged Chinese companies had infiltrated its systems and copied its trademarked metal detectors. Similarly, the program says BlueScope Steel had to deal with the theft of its formula for the popular building product Colorbond.
Over a decade ago, the United Nations adopted an action plan to combat human trafficking. More than 150 countries have since signed the Palermo Protocol and enacted laws criminalizing all forms of trafficking. Australia is one of the countries which has signed on and earlier this year, in recognition of the growth of number of cases, made forced labour and forced marriage criminal offences. And increasingly its international students are being targeted. Keisha West has more.
The widespread movement of women and children to service the sex industry across Asia is no secret. Indeed, globally, the trafficking of young girls for sexual exploitation is disturbingly prevalent and has been much publicised. But it's trafficking for the purposes of forced labour that's emerged as a growing problem throughout the world, one that's largely undetected and unreported. The United Nations estimates that internationally there are more than 21 million people in forced labour right now, and Australia is no exception.
We've seen women in domestic servitude, men and women in other forms of exploitation, often in commercial hospitality or in agricultural work. We know from other reports that people are in exploitative labour in factories and on construction sites. But these forms of exploitation are unrecognised.
Jennifer Byrne is director of Anti-Slavery Australia, an organisation that provides legal advice and other assistance to people who have experienced trafficking or slavery in Australia.
There's a lack of awareness about what trafficking and slavery looks like, and then there's a lack of information about what to do if there is a suspicion that a person may be living in such exploitative conditions.
In 2001, one such case did attract national attention. It involved a group of eight Indian stonemasons who were brought over from their home country to carve stone on an Indian temple south of Sydney. It emerged that they were forced to live in two shipping containers and work 7 days a week for a pittance. A year ago, another case of labour exploitation was revealed. Three Filipino men were allegedly paid less than $3 an hour to work on an oil rig off Western Australia, barely a fifth of the minimum wage, and far less than other Australian workers on the rig were being paid.
To say they're being ripped off is being a bit generous, really. It was almost slave wages in terms of the Australian oil and gas industry.
I came to this country because my cousin told me about a restaurant I could work in. Then they said I owed them $40,000.
The government admits Australia is a common destination country for people trafficked from Asia, particularly from Thailand, South Korea, the Philippines and Malaysia. Increasingly, it's Australia's international students who find themselves the victims of labour exploitation and bullying and racism in the workplace.
We're finding that international student cleaners seem to be more likely to suffer from bullying and harassment than other cleaners doing the same work. And we're also finding significant underpayments of international student cleaners.
One South Korean student who spoke to us under the condition that his identity wouldn't be disclosed said when he first arrived in Australia, initially on a six-month working visa, he worked at a farm where he was paid cash and no tax. He soon discovered he was earning less than the award wage and says he was also forced to pay for transport costs for the five-hour journey to the farm from Melbourne, despite being told he wouldn't have to.
When I worked in the farm, it was a bad experience because they don't want to pay the tax and they pay me like $13 per hour, but I didn't realise that is illegal and they always lie to us.
Jess Walsh from United Voice says the difficulty is many international students are too scared to come forward or to approach their employers.
When they go to their employer and ask to be paid for those extra hours, employers often refuse to pay them those extra hours and then threaten to report them to immigration.
United Voice has set up a Facebook page to help international students learn about their work rights.
One of the stories that came through the Facebook page was from an international student who has been working 54 hours a week and is only being paid for 20 hours a week.
In March, Australia passed new legislation, making forced labour a separate criminal offence for the first time. It'll also make it easier for victims to get compensation.
I think that as there is increased awareness of that provision in our law, there will be a greater response and more people will be identified and therefore protected.
It'll also make it easier for people to get compensation.
For anyone who has been trafficked into Australia and has been identified by the Federal Police as being trafficked, they can get support while they're providing some sort of evidence against a trafficker. So it's made it much more possible for people who've been trafficked to actually stay in Australia and be supported while they're part of that criminal justice process.
Russia has been preoccupied for much of its history with threats to security from the West, but Moscow has always kept an eye out for trouble from the East. Relations between the Soviet Union and China broke down in the 1950s, and now Moscow again is worried about Beijing's ambitions. Some Russian analysts fear another military challenge from China, while others believe the real threat will be China's economic dominance over Russia's Far East. Norman Hermant has the story.
Every May, Russia flaunts its military might on Red Square. Soldiers, tanks, and flypasts commemorate victory in the Second World War. But even with displays of strength like this, some Kremlin policymakers have been worried for years that Russia faces a growing threat, not from the West, but to the country's enormous Far East, from China.
From my viewpoint, the threat is extremely serious. Not just for the Far East, but for all of Russia.
More than 150 years ago, the Russian Empire reached here, Vladivostok, on the Sea of Japan, or the East Sea, a bulwark for Russian power in Asia. This port city is nearly five times closer to Beijing than it is to Moscow. And there are strategic thinkers who worry that Russia's presence here cannot hold back China, the emerging superpower next door.
It's absolutely evident that China just can't survive without expansion. Nobody likes to talk about that. China would naturally prefer a peaceful way of expansion, but if it fails, or if the speed of this expansion turns out to be extremely slow, then a military path is quite possible.
You don't hear much talk like that on the streets of Vladivostok, where the influence of China is a fact of life. Sui Kuei-lin is one of few Chinese who came here and stayed for decades. He married a Russian, he has Russian daughters, and now has Russian citizenship. But the former journalist, now an art dealer, says the issue of China's growing power is never far away.
I think the problem is very serious. Russian leaders, no comfortable.
They're worried.
Worried. Yes, worried. Putin, very worried.
There's not much fear at local universities, where Chinese students regularly come to study Russian. And with economic prospects much brighter across the border, many young Russians are eager to learn Mandarin. Most of these students see China as an opportunity.
I think they never tried to make war. They just try to have a friendly dialogue from all countries.
But even here, not all are quite so sure.
I think that Russia should be aware of China because Russia is unable to keep control over the Far East. That is why the government arranges all sorts of summits and builds roads. But they fail to realize that Chinese civilization is such that if China was willing, it would have already completely brought the Far East till the Urals under its control. It seems to me there is a big threat and the government realizes it.
Considering the size of this region and its relatively small population, the challenges for Russia here are obvious.
Most analysts agree the real potential Chinese threat to Russia's Far East isn't from the military. It's from China's overwhelming advantage in economic clout and population. Russia's Far East is a vast area, two-thirds the size of China, with just 6.5 million people. Contrast that with the three neighboring Chinese provinces, with a population of about 130 million.
In the fields of Primorsky Krai, the region around Vladivostok, it's not hard to see how China's huge pool of labor is being put to work. There are no exact figures to determine just how many Chinese are here on temporary work visas, but the number is believed to be in the tens of thousands in this region alone. The work is hard, and the pay is low by Russian standards. Without the workers from China, there'd be no harvest at this farming cooperative.
The Russians now are not so interested in working in the fields and farming under such conditions, when it is cold, bad weather, rain and humidity. It is more prestigious for everyone to be engaged in trade, in management.
It's much the same story at this local factory, where workers from China produce wood flooring that's exported to the United States. By some estimates, in all of Russia's Far East and Siberia, there are more than 500,000 Chinese workers in jobs like these. Very few stay. Most work virtually non-stop for several months at a time and return to China. The manager here, himself Chinese, says it's a practice that works well for both countries.
I've been working here for quite a while. I see how Russia is developing. It was a bit behind, but now Russia is progressing.
But it's not progressing fast enough to keep its best and brightest. And that's the real danger, says this professor, that Russia becomes economically irrelevant in its own Far East.
I do not think that the Russian Far East has a brilliant future. The most serious problem is that the quality of population is changing. The most active, young, educated people leave this region. We do not have enough qualified people who would like to live here and to develop this region.
If Russia can develop Far East normally, yes, there are no problems.
But if economic development doesn't come, this part of Russia could slowly but surely start to drift. And Moscow knows it.
That was Norman Hermont reporting. East Timor says it has indisputable evidence that Australia's overseas spy agency broke into the cabinet room of East Timor's government in Dili 9 years ago during negotiations for a treaty over the Great Sunrise gas field. East Timor's government is seeking to have the treaty declared invalid on the grounds that Australia did not act in good faith during the talks. Australian government ministers, past and present, have refrained from commenting on the matter. Sarah Everingham has the story.
East Timor says it has a strong case in its push to have the treaty on the Greater Sunrise gas field declared invalid. Lawyer Bernard Kaleri is from East Timor's legal team.
The evidence is irrefutable, and the Australian authorities are well aware that we're in a position to back that up. And of course we would not be and would not have formed our international litigation team unless we knew where we were.
East Timor argues Australia did not act in good faith during the negotiations on the Treaty on Greater Sunrise, which is known as CMATS. The treaty splits the billions of dollars in revenue from the Greater Sunrise field 50-50 between the two countries. The Timorese government is alleging that in October 2004, at the time the treaty was being negotiated, Australia's overseas spy agency broke into the cabinet room of East Timor's government in Dili in breach of international treaty conventions. Bernard Kaleri again.
It was cheating an unsophisticated and new government of a poor country with an appalling infant mortality rate for some gas that's a minuscule proportion of Australia's own reserves. There's no national interest espionage in a country that is supposed to observe the rule of law in behaving in this way.
Mr. Kaleri, who's a former ACT Attorney General, would not comment on who was involved in the operation. He did point out that ACES reported to then Foreign Minister Alexander Downer.
The operation was conducted by the Australian Secret Intelligence Service, and of course it operated and reported at the relevant times to Foreign Minister Downer.
Mr. Downer would not comment on the allegations.
Well, not surprisingly, nobody in the Australian government, past or present, is going to comment about intelligence matters one way or the other. It's just impossible to get into a discussion like that, and I'm certainly not prepared to break that very well-known convention.
Did this break-in happen? Did you know about it?
Well, again, I'm not going to discuss intelligence matters at all. It just is impossible to do that. And this is an allegation that these Timorese have made, and naturally enough, in those circumstances, we simply don't respond and never have done and never would.
The current Foreign Minister, Bob Carr, also says he cannot comment on intelligence matters. He emphasised that the dispute will not damage relations with East Timor.
Yeah, nothing can rupture the bonds between the people of Timor-Leste and the people of Australia, but I'm bound by a convention that says Australian government ministers don't comment on matters of security, intelligence, espionage, even when what's being said is plain untrue.
But East Timor's government says Australia has breached an agreement to refrain from megaphone diplomacy in the dispute. Lawyer Bernard Caleri again.
We understood that we wouldn't conduct this issue in public concerns us greatly.
Earlier this month, the federal government issued a press release saying that East Timor had initiated arbitration and was seeking to have the treaty declared invalid on the grounds Australia spied on East Timor during the negotiations. The release also said the allegations were not new.
And the manner in which they made it public was to patronise the East Timor government and refer to long and lengthy rumours of espionage. That wasn't the case. We informed Prime Minister Gillard of the precise, clear details of the break-in to the Timorese cabinet room.
The carve-up of the Greater Sunrise Field has been a contentious matter for years. The Treaty on Revenue Sharing was signed by Australia and East Timor in 2006, but the field is yet to be developed because there's been no agreement on how that should be done. East Timor wants a pipeline built from the Greater Sunrise Field to its south coast for onshore processing, while the developer, Woodside Petroleum, wants the gas processed on a floating platform at sea. There's also been discontent in East Timor about the clause in the treaty that prevents both countries from making any claims on a maritime boundary for 50 years. If the treaty were declared invalid, the maritime boundary question could open up again.
In India, the link between sports and betting is threatening the future of the country's Premier League cricket competition. The owner of the Mumbai Indians has become embroiled in a scandal involving betting on IPL matches, and now there are calls for the Chennai team to be thrown out of the league. Michael Edwards reports from Mumbai.
And Mumbai Indians have finally won the title that has been escaping their grip.
The Mumbai Indians wrapped up an easy win against the Chennai Super Kings, beating them by 23 runs to take out this year's Indian Premier League Championship. And it's likely the commiserations for the losing side will continue for some time. It now faces expulsion from the IPL after the son-in-law of its owner was found to be betting large amounts of money on matches. The owner, N. Srinivasan, is one of the most powerful men in the game. He's also the president of the Board of Control for Cricket in India. The controversy is leading to calls for his resignation from the BCCI, but he's not budging at this stage.
I've seen that, you know, the media baying for my blood, political parties saying I should resign, and various other people also. But I have done nothing wrong, so there's no question of my stepping down.
Hundreds of millions of people watch the IPL, and it generates even larger amounts of cash. But despite the outward signs of success, it faces many problems. It's also struggling with its first major spot-fixing scandal. Three players, including the former Test bowler Shantakumaran Srisanth, have been arrested for allegedly taking bribes. Former Australian player Dean Jones is now a commentator on Indian television.
We are going through a cleansing situation now. The game is starting to cleanse itself, and it'll do. The game's always been bigger, and karma's been invented in this country, and karma's coming its way.
Spot fixing is a major problem for cricket in South Asia, but despite many allegations, it's the first time the problem has raised its head in the IPL. Dilip Cherian, an expert on public relations and corporate governance, has called for a shake-up to the way the league is run.
I think that the way the laws and the regulations are framed within IPL by BCCI itself allow and are inimical to any transparency of any kind.
As yet unidentified allegations have also led to the International Cricket Council dropping Pakistani IPL umpire Asad Rauf from next month's Champions Trophy tournament. Many say the IPL's image is permanently dented, but not all are so pessimistic. Farooq Engineer is a former Indian player turned commentator.
IPL has built up a great name. You know, we're the envy of the world. And it has been tarnished. It has been dented. But let's not completely crash it, because, you know, we're still the centre of the world. And IPL is here to stay, for sure.
In the meantime, rumours abound that more IPL players will be arrested for spot-fixing.
And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Focus Asia Pacific. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, our email address is focus@pcjmedia.com. I want to remind you that this Sunday from 13 to 14 hours UTC, you can catch an international edition of the program with Andy Sennett, with a program that's targeting Southeast and East Asia on 11835 kilohertz. That's 11835 kilohertz between 13 and 14 hours UTC Sunday on PCJ Radio International. So, on behalf of the whole team that helped put the program together, this is Keith Parent wishing you well, hoping that you can join us again very soon for another edition of Focus Asia Pacific. We'll see you in 7 days' time. Keith Parent here from PCJ Radio International. Are you looking for a new portable shortwave receiver? Well, if you are, I would like to suggest Texan. Texan is one of the world's leading manufacturers of shortwave radios. Popular radios like the PL660, S2000, and so many more. Texan radios can be found at a number of fine electronic retailers worldwide. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Texan banner for more information on all their models. Texan, enjoy broadcasting.